Hello, Ed here, and thanks very much for listening to the Freelance Heroes podcast. And I hope, by the way, you enjoyed the Freelance Heroes Day event we had earlier this week. Wonderful speakers, great chat, lots to learn and be inspired by too. If you missed any of it, then sign up to the Freelance Heroes portal and you can catch up on those videos. Freelance-heroes.com is the website. Now, this week on the podcast, I chat with the third of our three freelancers who started their freelancing journey in 2021. Although this one started her planning wisely a few months before. So what is it that made Nikita start her freelancing journey now? Did the pandemic put her off? What has it been like starting a freelance business in the crazy world we find ourselves in? It's a great story. It's a wonderful business. And Nikita tells her story so well. So enjoy as we meet Nikita Gilbert. Nikita, hello. Lovely to meet you. And thank you for giving up your busy time, I'm sure, to chat about the early stages of your freelance business. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. So we're going to chat about, kind of life before and during the start of your freelance journey. But before we get into all of that, tell us a bit about yourself and introduce yourself.
So I'm Nikita. My background's been a little bit of a whirlwind, to be honest. Started out with a psychology degree at the University of Cambridge and thought that that would be my life. Went into research, which was good fun, but I discovered it wasn't for me long term. And then came off and was a project coordinator for a little while and started working on equality and diversity projects. So that's kind of how I got into the equality diversity work. And I also started looking at well-being. And since then, it's just progressed, really. So, yeah, I'm in my late 20s and I'm just working my way through it, seeing what suits me.
No, fair enough. So did you ever have dreams? I mean, ideas, not necessarily what the work would be, but either during your studies or afterwards, of the fact that someday you would like to be self-employed?
I think that whilst I was studying, I hadn't really considered it. Whilst I was studying, I very much thought that I would go into either teaching or healthcare. But as I started actually experiencing working life and actually became kind of familiar with what that looks like, I then started contemplating how it would look to be self-employed and the flexibility that would give.
So here we are in January 2021. Well, not right now. Now we're in the middle of May. But in January 2021, you started your freelance journey. So tell us at what point the idea kind of came into your head that this is what you wanted to do.
Yeah, so it was probably actually the beginning of the year before. So a lot of the work that I've been doing in equality and diversity is short-term contracts. So I would have full-time roles with different organizations, but they would be short-term. So I'd know that I was only going to be there for between 6 months and 2 years. So I was already kind of familiar with the idea of constantly changing clients. And then whilst I was doing one of those roles, I was contacted by another department asking if I'd do some work on the side for them. And this was where the idea kind of sprung up. It was the start of people saying to me, but I've got a little bit of work, would you be interested? And that was just when I started thinking about how would this work? Could I be a consultant? Could that work for me? I started jotting down some ideas, seeing if there was a need and an interest. And then when my contract came to an end in October, I spent a couple of months planning. And then in January, I was ready to start, which was this year. So,
And here we are. So tell us a bit more about the work. So my understanding is that you help businesses improve their diversity and equality within their organizations. So give us an idea of the type of client you would have and at the point that they would bring you along.
Yeah, so the work's actually twofold. So I do equality and diversity work, and I also do well-being work because mm-hmm. my background is in both areas and they overlap a lot. So I find that clients are often interested in both areas. They work quite well together. So one side of what I do is offer the consulting, which is where I have a look at what their current setup is like and whether there's ways that they could improve equality and diversity in their workplace. So this could be anything from looking at how they do their recruitment to their website, to staff training. You know, are they ensuring that they're being as inclusive as they possibly could? And then the wellbeing side of it is more training based. So I am a mental health first aid instructor. And I also organise wellbeing events, so weeks and things like that. So in terms of my clients, my average client, they literally could be any organisation. I've had really small kind of startups that have said to me, we're interested, can we attend a course or could you give us some information on how we'd improve things, right up to working with huge international companies who send me multiple clients over a period of time. So multiple different kind of, they're an umbrella company. They have lots of different companies beneath them that they send to me. So it really does vary. There isn't a single company that this suits.
So for the smaller ones, I assume, are the mental health first aid training side.
It does tend to be, and I tend to have to stick them together because there is a minimum number that we need to run courses. So I tend to pair them up with other small companies. But I have had a few where they've just wanted to make inquiries about, you know, a small amount of consulting in terms of how they could improve the way that they are public facing in terms of their equality and diversity.
So let's focus on, because I'm really fascinated. Well, I mean, there's two sides of it, especially given that we're in Mental Health Awareness Week as well. But we are at the point that we're recording this. But I want to focus on the wellbeing and diversity. Diversity and inclusive and equality elements. So, you know, obviously, we live in a world where that conversation is higher up on the agenda than it previously used to be, which is sad that we need to be, but good that it is happening. So what work do you do to help them kind of be, I mean, you've mentioned it already in terms of improving the wording on their website, etc., but give us more of an idea on that side of the business, how you help your clients.
So it probably helps if I give you kind of the background as to how I got into this, which is with regards to universities. So universities have the opportunity to apply for something called Athena Swan, which is an Equality, Diversity and Inclusion Award. And this is where my background started. So I'm very familiar with the application process. I've helped write applications and I've worked with universities on this. So that's how I kind of came into how do we improve a business to make it more inclusive, because you have to form quite a comprehensive action plan as part of that process. So when I work with an organization that's not looking to get an award, so it's not a university, I typically start by looking at their policies and procedures. So we'd start by looking at things like their leave. Do they, for example, take into consideration different types of parental leave? Do they make sure that their leave is accessible and that staff actually know how it works and are able to have conversations about things like disability, chronic conditions, that kind of thing? Are we inclusive in the way we support our staff? And then it normally goes on from there. So it normally goes on to look at training. So what training are we offering our staff, particularly our line managers, to support others? And then I start looking at the front facing, so websites, brochures, anything like that. And are we getting across the fact that we're an inclusive employer and could we be doing anything better?
And on the mental health side of things, I'm quite fascinated with this as well. I do some work with Calmtown St Ives, which is only around the corner from you, here in Cambridgeshire, and to make St Ives a safe place to talk about mental health and well-being. What got you into wanting to also include the mental health first aid training as well? Because it sounds like from the, you know, the inclusive side of it, the equality, the diversity, you know, that could, it sounds like, could pretty much fill your diary on its own if you pushed it to. So what got you interested in including this element as well?
Yeah, you're completely right. So the equality and diversity stuff could be a standalone if I wanted it to be. But a lot of the work I've done has always also focused on well-being, because it's so interrelated to the inclusivity work that I look at. So in one of my jobs in particular, it was my job to set up a network of mental health first aiders. And this was a few years ago now. It was the first I'd come across it. And I undertook the training myself to become a mental health first aider. And when I did that, I thought, this training is absolutely fantastic. It's one of the best training courses I've ever been on. And that was the point where I decided that I wanted to buy into this and I thought I could be an instructor. So I got in contact with Mental Health First Aid England and I haven't really looked back since. it really draws on my background in psychology as well. It allows me to really utilize my skills and my interests. So it's something that I'm quite passionate about. I'm very willing to do all of the background research and things because it takes a lot of effort to keep on top of the information that you need to do the training. But it's just a fantastic course that I feel really strongly about. So.
No, and I'm sure you are adding immense value on both sides of it. So let's talk about the business owner side of things too. So clearly you put an awful lot of thought into it. I mean, I come across a lot of freelancers who pretty much, get made redundant one week and start freelancing the next. But you put a lot of thought process into it as well. Is that just your nature to be kind of very incredibly organized and pragmatic, or was there something else that kind of stopped you from just going, I'm just gonna do it now?
I think it's definitely part of my nature. I'm a very organized person. I like to plan things. I like to know where I stand. But it also,
I mean, envy you.
Yeah. The other side of it is that there wasn't really a contingency. So I grew up without very much money. I've always had to build things myself and support myself. So there wasn't a backup. There wasn't somebody who could step in and say, well, if things don't go well, I can help. I can support that side of things. So I had to be quite certain that this leap was always going to be a gamble, but that it was going to be as well judged as it could be.
Were there any times you weren't certain? Were there any times during the last year where you thought, maybe this isn't right?
There's definitely been times where I've thought, was this the right decision? Particularly because I suddenly don't know where my month-to-month income is coming from. So there is no clear, this is when you're going to get paid and this is what's going to happen. You have to find those clients yourself. So there's definitely elements of me going, is this the right decision? But I've never regretted it because I love kind of my new lifestyle. I enjoy the work. I enjoy getting my teeth into all the different aspects of the business. So not from that respect.
No, well, good. And glad to see it. And so you incorporated in October and you started trading in January. What was that journey like between the two? At what point did you start looking for your first client?
So I actually in October had already started making contacts and reaching out to people to just say that the business now existed, and to find out if there was any interest and if people were still, because it's one thing for people to say, we think that's a good idea, we would be interested. It's another for them to actually sign up to your products. Mm. So as soon as October hit and I incorporated, I started contacting people again and saying, look, I now exist. And I said from the beginning, my plan was to start in the new year because October is quite a poor time to start trading in terms of training and things. Everybody's taking leave. It doesn't really work. And then I got my responses in, a couple of them, which I was quite pleased about, saying that they were still interested. And my first customer actually was working with me for a few months then because they'd never done anything like this before and they wanted to be quite certain about what I could offer them. So they were looking at the mental health side of things, and they were very interested in how it was going to work, how I could be flexible to make sure their staff could attend training, that kind of thing. So I got that planning, and then the booking was confirmed in January and we ran in February. So,
well, there's a celebratory moment, I'm sure.
A huge one, yeah.
So how did you source those first clients? Were there people who already knew, or did you kind of trawl through LinkedIn, or what was it?
The very first clients, I relied on my network. So because my background's in equality, diversity, inclusion and wellbeing work anyway, I was aware that certain people had a need for this. So they'd been saying, we can't get a trainer for the life of us at the moment, we can't get the consultation that we need. So they were my first port of call, people that I'd already spoken to, I already knew were struggling to source this kind of work. And that very first client was actually, in the end, it was my old sixth form. So they'd kept in touch with me in terms of my journey and things so that they could tell their current students where I was, and they, particularly because I was a Cambridge graduate. In the end, they were my very first client, which was very nice.
Brilliant. Sounds like a perfect way to grab your first client. Yeah. So what's been maybe you've already answered it by securing that client in January. So if you have, maybe let's put that one aside. What else then has been the highlight of your freelancing journey so far?
I think it was a really big moment when I got my first set of feedback just for me. So I started out, and I definitely started out by focusing on the training side of it, because it's a lot easier to market. People understand what first aid training is. They understand where it's coming from. And it was a lot easier for me to focus on just that for the first few months. So that's what I did. But as part of that, you have to collect feedback. And getting that first feedback just as a sole instructor, so not working alongside anybody else, it was purely me, was probably the highlight, that first set of it.
And, you know, there's so much to being a freelancer. There is the admin, the marketing, the sales, the invoicing, including the admin, of course, and obviously delivering the service that you provide. Which part of freelancing in the first few months have you already decided, I'm not a fan of that bit?
I'm not a fan of marketing to people that I don't know. So I don't mind it, but I don't like the pushy sales. I find that quite hard. It doesn't come very naturally to me to write a sales pitch. So I've had to work really hard in terms of learning that actually it's okay to say that what I do is good, and that, you know, it is something that people should buy into. But that's been really hard for me.
So how have you overcome that?
It helped that I started out with people that I knew in terms of my initial client base. There were people that I'd worked with before. So even if I didn't know them on a personal level, I had at least had a conversation with them. And that helped a lot because it gave me a little bit of practice. It helped me draw together some documents and things. And I do a lot of product descriptions and things like that on paper so that I don't have to have those difficult conversations, because I know that they're not my strong point. So I'm really good at the kind of, what is it that you want from me? And I'll happily have those discussions, and I love doing those face to face. But when it comes to the product descriptions, costings and things like that, I now have it all in kind of paper form, and I email it over so I don't have to have those conversations.
Wonderful. We've all had to adapt to working from home, whether you're employed or self-employed, over the last 12 months. So from your perspective, was that something that you feel incredibly comfortable with? Or, I mean, especially given that you work with so many organizations who have big and small number of employees, is there an element of that where you miss it?
Not really. Working from home suits me an awful lot, and I've been very fortunate in that I've kept contact with a few of my old colleagues from my previous job. We're in quite regular touch, and that's been really nice. And I've also made a few contacts with people who do part of what I do. So, for example, somebody else who provides training, I've become quite good friends with. We are in regular contact. So I've still got that conversation that I think is so important that you get in the workplace. My roles, to be honest, have always been standalone, because it's very rare that a company would employ more than one person to look at equality, diversity and inclusion. So I'm quite used to the fact that there's nobody else doing what I'm doing. And I'm still getting that interaction by having that contact with my colleagues from previous jobs.
So, I mean, Freelance Heroes is a community, so this question is probably inevitable. How important is it to you? I mean, what's your close network of... I mean, you've started to answer this already, of course, but in terms of other freelancers, other people who may not be trainers themselves or working well-being, they may be entirely different in the industries that they work, but they understand the pleasure and pain of being self-employed. So how do you kind of have that close network to near you, and how has that helped?
So the Freelance Heroes has actually been absolutely fantastic. I wasn't aware it existed before being a freelancer, because it wasn't on
Why
my
would
radar.
You?
Yeah, exactly. It's not the kind of thing you'd look for. But I was actually given the details by a colleague of mine who's another freelancer in a completely different area. And she kind of messaged me, and I said, I'm going to go for it. I'm taking the plunge. I'm setting up my own business. How did you get started? Any suggestions? And her first thing was, join Freelance Heroes. And if you have any questions, post it to the group. And I've posted a couple of questions just about things that I've had no idea on. And the group has been fantastic. You always get 15, 60 responses within a couple of minutes. It's normally, the first time it was actually quite overwhelming, because I then had to sift through all of the responses. But just knowing that there's other people that have already done what you've done, it makes you feel like you can ask those questions that you think are perhaps maybe a little bit trivial, or you're just not sure where to start. So that's been absolutely invaluable. And from there, I've also created a few contacts that I've been able to start having conversations with, and I think we'll stay in touch and share our experiences moving forward.
Lovely. Good. I'm glad. I wasn't after a eulogy of freelance heroes, but I will take it gladly. So you're very organized. You put a lot of time into the planning. How much have you put into where you want to go with the freelance business?
I think I felt like at the beginning, I was quite sure where I wanted to go, and I'd already planned that, and it was all very organized. But since I've started, that plan has gone completely out the window.
And what was it?
I think I was very kind of, I was insistent that I was going to start with the mental health first aid training, and then I was going to start off at advertising my consulting side of it with the equality and diversity. And then that was how the business would grow. That would be my main focus. I'd do those two things. But actually, I've had people getting in touch with me saying things like, would you do a bit of writing for me? Would you do a bit of, and other things that completely relate to what I do, but they're not on the original list of things that I was going to offer. And I've enjoyed that a lot more, actually. It's a part of it that has been really quite interesting and quite exciting. So I've decided instead that I'm just going to go with the flow and see how it goes.
No, fair enough. I can't not ask this question because, you know, we are hopefully, fingers crossed, coming out of the pandemic. At least we can see the light at the end of the tunnel, however long that tunnel remains. But, you know, that must have played a part in your decision process to go freelance too, either by helping it or by hindering it. You know, it's a pandemic. Why now?
I mean, I did always intend on starting the business this year. It was supposed to start in March, not January, but my contract ended early because of COVID. So I was pushed. It was one of those where I was given that final shove because actually my previous role ended and I needed to do something. So that's fine. It gave me the kind of motivation that I needed to get on with it. I was a bit wary because of COVID and naturally, is this a good time to start a business? But I was still getting people contacting me saying, would you be interested in looking at this work for us? And that gave me the kind of reassurance that it was still okay. Mental Health First Aid England then put in place a online version of the course. Everybody was really skeptical about this to begin with because it's a course that really relies on personal interaction. You get to know your group, you work with them for 2 full days, and it's always been about that personal contact. But the online version has actually been fantastic. As soon as we started running it and started actually seeing what it involved, we realized that a lot of it was transferable. And that just cemented it. That was just kind of, okay, I can do everything online. People are still asking for it. So it turned out to be a really good time, for want of a better way of putting it.
Because, I mean, you preempted my next question, which is that, you know, again, from my work with Calmtown, I see that I talk to mental health trainers who say that, you know, being in a classroom is, you know, paramount to the success of mental health training. There must be an element of, okay, right, this is now going to be online. What does it miss for you? How have you found delivering the training online, which I'm assuming you're not preferring to being in a classroom, but so how have you adapted?
I have to admit that I now kind of view them quite separately. So I wouldn't actually say that I prefer one over the other because they're very different. So I've mostly adapted by getting myself set up and making sure that everything is reliable enough and good enough that it will work well in that situation. Because there's nothing worse than attending a training session where you can't hear somebody properly or the internet cuts out halfway through. And so I had to do the practical side of things. We had to make sure that we were properly set up for it. The training itself has actually worked really well. So we do insist that everybody has a camera, and we do it over platforms like Zoom, depending on what their preference is for their organization. So we've had to learn how to use all the different platforms. It works really, really well in terms of the group discussions. It seems to have had no impact at all, which surprised me, in terms of those interactions and encouraging people to have those important conversations. And also, as an instructor, I can still see how everybody's doing, so I can gauge the mood in the room and time what I need to. The thing that we have lost is we've lost the networking. So you can't during your break have a chat with everybody and see how people are doing or what job they do and that kind of thing. That's the bit that I feel like we've really lost. But I thought it would be a lot different, and it really isn't.
So now you started, you're up and running. What's your goal for this year? Where do you, you know, by the time you get to January 2022 and look back, what do you hope you will have achieved?
I'm hoping to have found a bit more of a balance with some of the other services, because it has, I am quite mental health first aid heavy at the moment, just because it was easier to start out by marketing a single product at the beginning. So I'd like to find a bit more of a balance, get a little bit more on the equality and diversity side of things. I've got a few spaces now available to do a bit more consulting on that side. So yeah, it's essentially that, and then just building my client base, just building up the number of people that I'm working with.
I'm curious, because you know you've got these two big sides to your business. I can easily see one becoming more dominating than the other. You may have already seen signs of that happen as it is. Do you think at some point you're going to end up kind of being known or focusing? I know you kind of put it under well-being, but can you see yourself focusing or being drawn towards one area? And if not, how do you ensure that that doesn't happen?
To be honest, I don't actually mind if it does happen. So the reason I chose my name is because it's quite flexible. And also the products that I'm offering are quite, they're umbrella terms. So there's a lot that I can offer within them, which is really helpful. So like I said before, people have asked me to do some writing, which isn't something I set out to do, but it absolutely is covered. So if I feel like I'm edging towards a certain area, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing as long as I'm enjoying that area. I'd still like to carry on with the other bits, but if I find that at a certain time of year one part is more popular than another, then I'm just going to go with it. And I know that I can still offer those other services to clients. And I do expect they'll continue to exist, but it might be that it fluctuates in terms of what's most popular.
Now, you talked about the fact that your business name allows for that flexibility, which we haven't mentioned yet, which is Five Ways Consulting. Explain what those five ways are.
So the five ways, the name came about because I jotted down the things that I enjoy doing. I was like, what do I enjoy in my job? What are the things I am good at? What would I like to do as a consultant? And there happened to be five of them. So the first one is the mental health first aid training. And the second one is the equality, diversity and inclusion consulting. So they're very broad, but people know exactly what they are. They're quite kind of, everybody's heard of it. They know what it is. I then have staff engagement. So I've done a lot of work on staff surveys and setting up things like focus groups, that kind of thing, to ensure that we're actually delivering what our staff need. I then have topic briefings. So these are mental health related. So these are info sessions that can be used for people that can't attend the full training. So these are designed by my psychology background, and just info sessions for generic staff or the public. And then the final thing is the wellbeing activities. So this is because I've spent a lot of my time planning events and activities, I've built up quite a database. So organization of wellbeing weeks and things like that is something that I could quite easily offer as well. So that's my five things.
Brilliant. You said yourself that Freelance Heroes is a community that you weren't aware of before you started going freelancing, and completely understandable, but there'll be other tools and apps that you weren't aware of too. So which do you find you couldn't live without now?
To be honest, it's mostly for me been about having to embrace social media rather than repel it, because as a personal thing, I'm not big on any of those. In fact, it's been years since I'd posted on anything before setting up a business. So I've had to embrace it, and that's been my biggest learning curve. So I now am very frequent on LinkedIn. I'm quite big on there, and I've got a lot of my business from there. So that's been the biggest thing that I've had to do. I've had to embrace all of the aspects. So LinkedIn and Facebook have been my starting point. And I'm just setting out on Eventbrite as well. So,
and I've got to ask, Zoom or Teams?
Zoom.
No one has said Teams yet.
I think it also helps because I've just got some clients in the US, and Zoom is definitely the preference over there.
No, that's fair enough. I asked that as a trainer myself as well, and I have to say I agree. Nikita, it's been lovely for you to kind of share the early part of your journey and what's helped you get there. And you've been very open about, you know, kind of your what's and why's and how's. Can we catch up again in a few months' time just to see how it's evolved since this conversation?
Yeah, absolutely. That'd be great.
Brilliant. And obviously we'll put the links so that people can get in touch with you through your website, LinkedIn, etc. in the show notes. But thank you very much for your time and good luck.
No, thank you.
Thanks, Nikita. Great stuff there. And I'd love to hear from you too. Whether you started this year, last year, 10 years ago, it doesn't matter. What has it been like for you running a freelance business during this time? And also, what are your feelings for the coming months and years as we hopefully, wherever you are, it's more challenging in some places than others, hopefully soon come out the other side of this pandemic. What are your feelings for the future of freelancing and your freelance business? Do let me know, podcast@freelance-heroes.com, and then maybe we can have a chat on the show too. Until next week, thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Bye for now.